Hello and welcome to the Message Makeover podcast brought to you by the Latimer Group, the experts in persuasive communication. I'm Dan Cooney and I'm joined today by my colleagues Amy Fenollosa and Dean Brenner. Hi, Amy. I heard your event was a huge success. Tell us a little bit about Kids Hugs and the Ride.
Thanks, Dan. We had a great children's bike ride a couple of weeks ago, raising money for a nonprofit that I run that supports families who are coping with serious illness. And it was a great turnout and a successful fundraising event. It was a great day.
Thanks. Love those pictures. All the kids and all the riders in the single color neon looked great. Dean, it's baseball detente this week. Yankees and Red Sox are the two best teams in baseball. Let me channel my new interest in yoga and simply say, I see the light in your team. It's a light that eventually will be extinguished, but hey, they're both teams are playing well.
See, now you want detente now because the Yankees are doing better. But in the first podcast a few weeks ago when the Red Sox were on top, detente was not on the tip of your tongue. So I'm going to have to think about that one.
It's all about mindfulness, Dean. I'm all about today, what's happening right now. I don't even remember 2 weeks ago.
Okay, well, we just took two out of three, so remember that.
Okay, well, for new listeners of the Message Makeover, our show takes a topical business communications challenge, and we offer our coaching thoughts and feedback to an executive. This is going to be a great episode, and we're excited to offer a Message Makeover for the great serial entrepreneur Elon Musk. In case you haven't been following, Musk led a contentious earnings call on Wednesday, May 2nd, when he called one analyst's question boring and another's boneheaded. This follows a wave of negative attention, including a fatal accident, including a Tesla SUV that was operating in autonomous mode. Not long after that, he played the now famous April Fool's joke, where he posted on social media that Tesla was bankrupt. To make matters worse, the Model 3 has been having production problems and missing milestones. Moody's downgraded the company's credit rating. They're burning through cash, and the short sellers are circling. So this first question for Amy, we talk a lot about the various kinds of awareness. How would you rate Elon Musk's self-awareness and his audience awareness?
Thanks, Dan. It has been a raucous month or so as we have been following the trajectory of Tesla and listening to what Elon Musk has to say. And so when we think about self-awareness, you've got to be cued into the circumstances and the environment, yourself and also your audience, starting with his reaction and response to the April Fools when he came out and put a joke on Twitter. It seemed completely inappropriate and totally unaware of any of those different environments. When we listened to him on his earnings call last week, he showed no degree of self-awareness at all. I mean, if he were self-aware, he might have been reflecting a little bit about what people were hoping to hear from him. So I rate him fairly low on all spectrums of awareness. Dean, what did you think specifically?
Couldn't agree more, Amy. And I think adding a little bit to Amy's comments and focus on the situation, because, you know, there's, as we always talk about, Dan, there's lots of types of awareness and they layer on top of each other. And you can be highly self-aware. I agree with Amy in this case. I'm not sure our buddy Elon is highly self-aware. But then you can't discount the situational awareness. And the bottom line is the situation for Tesla is not good. I mean, you mentioned a number of the things right at the top there, Dan. Earnings are terrible. They're burning through cash. You know, production problems, short sellers of the stock all over the place. It's one thing to joke around when you're the CEO of a company and things are going great. It's an entirely different thing to joke around when you're the CEO of a company when things are going badly. So if whatever grade we give him on self-awareness, I would actually go lower on situational awareness because – and this is something we talk about all the time. When his name comes up, he's not playing with other people's money. He's no longer just rich guy with his own little startup doing his own thing. Isn't it cool? Great idea. You know, love his creativity. Tesla's publicly traded, and you know that's shareholders' money. So the situational awareness here is not only low, I'd say it's bordering on non-existent.
Yeah, we made up the acronym last time of situational awareness deficit, SAD, for Elon Musk. So we definitely would all agree that he has some work to do on that. And so next question is then, how do we think that affects his credibility in the investment community, with, you know, potential customers, his employees? Where do we think his credibility is? Because, of course, credibility is one of the key components of being able to communicate effectively.
I think he's got a big credibility problem, and he has a lot of work to do in order to earn it back. We have heard him speaking out. I mean, he was just plain rude to people on the earnings call the other day. When we think about having that audience awareness, he knew he was speaking with investors, and they were going to have questions about numbers and dollars, and he couldn't respond to those. He started that call out by saying, "We'll go for as long as it takes. We'll take as many questions as you have." And then not long afterwards said, "Next, no more boring questions." So he wasn't responding to that particular audience's needs. In order to build his credibility, he's got to acknowledge the people that he's talking to, hear their specific concerns, and respond to them. Yeah. Nobody's going to believe him if he can't answer their questions.
Well, you can't imagine that any of these CEOs or CFOs, you know, love being grilled like that. But they all do the same thing. They kind of grit their teeth quietly and then do the dance. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the call. As someone said, it's not a TEDx. It's not a TED Talk.
Right.
This is an analyst call. This is what they're supposed to be, those nitty-gritty questions. That's the whole point of the analyst call.
Totally. I mean, the analysts are the gatekeepers to his shareholders and potential shareholders. And, you know, to treat them – I used to be in this line of work. I worked on Wall Street for 5 years. And it was a long time ago, but not so long ago that I actually forget what it was like. I have literally never heard an analyst call like that in my life, ever. Like, not even – there's nothing that came even close. Maybe there have been others like it. I just don't remember them. I was never part of them. And just the utter disdain for the questions. And you know, I listened to that entire recording of that analyst call. The questions for a company that has had poor financial performance were entirely appropriate.
Right.
You know, comparing and contrasting this to, you know, our last podcast where we talked about the questions going at our friend Mark Zuckerberg from Congress. Totally different environment.
Right.
Okay. We talked about those, you know, congressmen, you know, really not even being able to understand their questions, almost to a level of comedy, how unprepared they were. These analysts were entirely prepared. They were asking totally reasonable questions, substantive questions. And he didn't like them because his answers were going to have to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we all tough to listen to.
Also, you know, he stepped on his own message there because even though things – he had some things to explain.
Yeah.
But, you know, those numbers were a beat. They're a beat on revenue. They're a beat on earnings per share. I mean, not things aren't going great, but they were a beat. There was no reason for him to get like –
100% agree.
You know, he just missed it, an opportunity to say, hey, we have some – you know, we have some challenges, but we're not doing, you know, as bad as, you know, people may think.
Right. Right.
So this comes back to the self-awareness and his ego. He was there protecting his ego. He didn't want to stand behind the work. He didn't want to acknowledge the failure with production on the three. All he wanted to do was protect who he was.
Right.
And in fact, he actually spoke over his CFO when his CFO was answering some of the questions specifically pointed to him and said, "We're the best in class." He interrupted and said, "We're the best, not just in class." He's not backing that up with his own credibility.
Totally.
It was shocking to me.
You know, I think these podcasts are more fun when we don't all agree. But I think Elon's, Elon's not given us a lot to sort of debate here because I think this is a fairly cut and dry case.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still a huge Elon fan in general. I think he's like a real life version of Iron Man myself. But in these last few weeks, in these last couple of months, he's not performing. He's not living up to – he's got to have the grit. You know, he wants to be Steve Jobs, but Steve Jobs got stuff done in the end. You know, there was the genius part, right? But there was also the execution part. And he's got to be able to put those two pieces together.
So I want to point out something there. Ask you a question, Dan, when you mentioned the genius part. We all know that Elon is brilliant and he's been a visionary and he has some degree of success.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he was doing this intentionally or was he just blind?
I'm going to say I think he's blind. I mean, I think he has this vision that is so huge in his mind. It's beyond what I think that he thinks that people may not be able to understand, you know, what his vision is, the enormity of his vision. He's trying to transform the world of transportation, whether it's driverless cars or rocket rides to Mars. This is where he goes. And there was somebody who said, it's not mine, but they said, you know, what he gets frustrated by is he sets these enormous goals, which is not so – it's a little bit atypical of CFOs and CEOs because they want to be careful, right? They don't want to have bad news on the conference call. So he feels he's punished by having these really enormous stretch goals and then maybe meeting like 70% of them. So he feels a little bit misunderstood in that way. So, and to me, I don't think he was – it was intentional. I just think you know, he's frustrated by what he thinks are like these Lilliputians, you know, picking at him. Yeah. And he's Gulliver.
I wondered if it was just a diversion tactic. He was trying to take the conversation away from the fact that they're missing all of their numbers and they're losing money and draw the attention toward himself and have people start to question his credibility or his capabilities.
Wouldn't be the first time in today's world that might be happening, you know, not being super specific, but that sort of question that Amy's asking comes up in our political environment too. Are certain behaviors from certain people who love Twitter, who shall otherwise remain nameless, are those a diversion, or is that a person who just literally cannot control himself?
Which one's worse?
Which one's worse? Right. Which one's worse? I'm literally flipping through Elon's Twitter feed right now. And it feels to me like this is just a guy who thinks differently and doesn't totally embrace what the role of the 21st century CEO needs to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I am going to repeat myself here, but now that I'm seeing the Twitter feed, I feel it even more strongly. Like, here's a company that has – okay, fine. Maybe they would have had a slightly better than expected – you know, performance this quarter if he'd allowed that to be the story. But the bottom line is the numbers by any reasonable measure have been bad. And here he is tweeting about things that have nothing to do with his company, talking about candy. What kind of candy do you like?
That was his – he was picking a fight with Warren Buffett, one of the most beloved –
Yeah, he's picking a fight with Warren Buffett.
If you're a billionaire and you're beloved, I mean, you're doing something right.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to be picking a fight with Warren Buffett.
Honestly, if I was alone in a room with this guy and coaching him, my first piece of advice would be hand the company Twitter feed, hand your Twitter feed off to somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, get off Twitter, dude. It is not representing you well. It's no longer giving me an insight into your genius. It's making me think you can't focus on the company whose performance stinks.
So do you think – really, in this case, he needs to hand not just the Twitter feed, but all of his communications to a Sheryl Sandberg, COO, a strong COO.
Yes.
I mean, he needs to back off, right, and give someone who's more capable of having these kinds of communications.
Mature
in the world.
Conversations. Right.
And so he may recognize his weaknesses, and he hasn't been brave enough yet to acknowledge them and say, I'm going to hand off these earnings calls to the CFO. Instead, he interrupts him and steps over him. Yeah. But maybe he needs some coaching to say, what are you good at? Be a visionary and stand out for being the visionary. Step back a little bit on calls like this and allow someone else to be the spokesperson for your company.
Mm-hmm. And yet we hear today that he's seemingly doing the contrary thing, which is flattening the organization. He's basically one of the guys who's in charge of production and engineering is taking a leave of absence. Another they lost somebody to it's a company it's a autonomous driving company, but I think it's owned by Alphabet, Google. So he's losing somebody. So he says we're making the company flatter, which might mean like more Elon. When we might be needing a little less Elon now.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he talks about that when he announced this change so that we can be prepared for the future. Mm. And as a company that's trying to be futuristic with all of these different endeavors, it's interesting to see that this is how he's moving forward. I'm not sure it's going to work. I mean, is he just reacting to people leaving, or is he the one driving this change?
Yeah, I think there's a huge amount of turmoil at that company, and apparently employees are used to it to some degree, but there's levels of turmoil, and you know, when you get to turned up to 11, you know, maybe it's time to find another way to do business.
This is all going to come down to ultimately whether they perform. If they start producing the cars on time and the cars are good and people like them, this will all be long forgotten.
Right.
But in the meantime, until that happens, you don't actually control your own narrative, right? And this is where he's going to continue to get himself in trouble. Like, when things are going great, again, you can be a little quirky and people will give you all the leash that you want. But right now, the amount of patience he has from the public, the amount of patience he has from the investor public is going to be dramatically shorter with this kind of behavior. So he's actually putting more pressure on their financial and production results with this kind of behavior.
Yep, that's right.
Because more and more people are going to be like, I'm not – because I'm no longer – I'm clearly not investing in the financial returns because the financial returns have been bad. So am I going to invest in Elon? And this kind of behavior makes – I think it less likely that people are going to say, yes, I want to invest in Elon.
I think it's interesting that you just said that. I think it's become more just that simple question for investors. Am I investing – I know what Elon is.
Yeah. It's the most heavily shorted stock on Wall Street right
now.
Am
I investing in Elon or aren't I? Because because this is what we get when we invest in Elon.
Yeah. So he has to be the spokesperson.
Right.
How do we coach him? What do you say to a guy like this?
Well – going back to what you were saying before, though, I'm not sure that he has to be. He may end up being, but I think the first round of coaching, and you should comment on this, Amy, is it even possible to get him to hand over the microphone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, first, mm-hmm. I think that's the first round of coaching with him is, can you get him to take a step back?
So ask him to reflect a little bit on the goals of the company and what his vision is for the future and how they are going to accomplish that, and think deeply about what he wants to see Tesla doing and how he's going to allow them to do that, maybe by allowing someone else to speak out. So that's number one, is have that degree of self-awareness so that he can recognize what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are.
I mean, his focus is so split. He's got Tesla, SolarCity, the Boring Company, SpaceX. I mean, it's not just a serial entrepreneur. He's a polygamist entrepreneur. I mean, wouldn't you think that he would take that advice to potentially – step back and let someone think about, okay, let me help you execute this, Elon, and including the communications piece.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's a challenge to help people raise their own degree of self-awareness. Totally. That's something that we think about in our workshops frequently. Totally. And it's not easy for someone who is very self-confident and secure with who they are to take a break and pause
and step back,
get that perspective from other people.
Getting a founder to take a step back and give other people a seat at the table, not always easy.
Mm-hmm.
Not always
mm-hmm.
easy. You know, we could have a whole other conversation about that.
Well, it's fascinating to talk about Elon Musk. I always enjoy it. Like I said, the real life version of Iron Man. We always wrap up with the key coaching takeaway. So, Amy, if you had Elon Musk for 30 seconds, what advice would you have for him?
I would say, Elon, it's time to get real. Let's pause for a minute and take yourself and your ego, give it a back seat, and listen to the questions and respond to your investors. It's going to be hard to do, but he's going to have to answer candidly.
Mm. Okay, Dean, you're the only human on the planet left. Mm. Elon Musk will listen to. What do you tell him?
Yeah, following up what Amy said, I would focus on three things. First one is, I would try and get him to empower somebody else, at least in terms of speaking to the finance community, the investor community, empower somebody else to speak on behalf of the company for these issues. That would be point number one. Point number two, regardless of who the mouthpiece is, there has to be a greater acknowledgement of the problems. And you can't insult the question and the questioner because the results are bad. So point number two is you have to embrace and own the problems. And then point number three would be, okay, what is your specific plan to turn around the performance? Like, give us faith that something is happening here that is going to make things better at some point in the relatively near future. So empower somebody else to speak up, acknowledge the issues and the numbers and own them, and then give us a plan to turn it around that goes beyond, you know, trying to make us laugh on your Twitter feed.
Yeah, and you know, I think he may be actually suited for that because he really is in the details of the engineering and production piece. I mean, he knows a lot of the answers. He could give you probably 10 minutes on the mistakes that they made, why they made them, and what they're doing to fix them. Mm-hmm. So he could be pretty effective if he would just get over this ego piece, as you mentioned. Well, that does it for this edition of The Message Makeover. We thank our whole team at the Latimer Group, including Whitney Sweeney, Hannah Morris, Kendra Ragukas, and especially our producer, Brett Slater, in the always beautiful pastoral gem that is Wiscasset, Maine. Next time on The Message Makeover, we will answer your communications questions on the show, so tweet those questions to @TheLatimerGroup or post to the Latimer Group Facebook page. Until then, see you next time on The Message Makeover.
The Message Makeover podcast is presented by the Latimer Group, the experts in persuasive communication, corporate training, and executive coaching delivered with impact. For more information on the Latimer Group and for more episodes of the Message Makeover podcast, look for us on iTunes, Google Play, and online at thelatimergroup.com.